Hey there, everybody. Welcome to Cambridge Inside Out. My name is Robert Winters.
And I'm Judy Nathans.
And today is actually the day after Independence Day, July 5th, 2022.
I know.
And
did you go to the river?
I did not go to the river. I did watch fireworks from through my kitchen window, which I can see.
You can see them? Oh.
I can actually see the top of the Pru and I can see it. But honestly, it's not nearly as good as being under it.
No, it isn't.
I'm not that worried about crowds these days, like in the wonderful world of COVID, but somehow I just didn't really feel like being around
a bazillion people. Yeah, I mean, I would never be out that late for fireworks, but I did take advantage of biking all the way down Memorial Drive because it was closed. So I did that around 8 o'clock. Yeah, it was because I've done that in the past and it's just like magical and it's fine. And people were on either side, although, you know, they didn't have any sound. No video monitors. So I had it on my iPhone because it was on Bloomberg Radio or whatever. So I listened to a little bit of the beginning and then I just rode back before it got too dark.
We just turned the lights off in the kitchen and watched it through the window.
I used to be able to see it from Putnam Avenue, but I could have walked out to Mass Ave very easily, but I didn't want to.
It's sort of a tough July 4th in some respects.
It's very sad what happened in Highland Park and everything.
I'm looking at it going like, are we all just crazy in this world? What's going on?
We are.
Why can't we solve problems that do have solutions?
You know what? I just heard they took knives away from this kid a while ago. They took knives away and yet he was able to buy a gun legally.
Yeah. They,
give me a break. There should have been flags there, but you see, the gun legislation just isn't going. There's no,
I know. Well,
the background checks, everything is like a mess.
I mean, one thing that kept rolling through my mind, I won't necessarily bring up the quotes here exactly, but
yeah,
I remember my friend David Good years ago, he actually wrote a nice little piece. It was actually it was specifically in the wake of the end of rent control. And he basically trying to describe how the fact that rent control in Cambridge went away, whether people love it or hated it, or maybe it should or shouldn't, well, that's not the point. But the point is that it was an existing program that was in place. And the people who were either for it or against it, even the people who were for it, just couldn't come to some sort of resolution to tweak it, to do things to make it better.
That's right.
In fact, they made it so that it became untenable and they basically created the movement that basically brought it to an end.
To a state level.
What I remember what David had written in this rather clever piece that was actually published in the Chronicle in early 1995 was a phrase that just keeps coming back to me.
It says,
he was talking about the various parties who were, you know, involved in the rent control days, how they all benefited from the existence of a problem. And if the problem went away, basically their power would vanish. And I kept thinking about that in terms of national politics and thinking to myself, how many political people today, how many people over the many years that you can think of, basically their entire political existence is basically founded on the perpetuation of a problem that enables them to continue to be the outspoken person advocating
Second Amendment, Roe versus Wade. I mean, it's absolutist positions. Yeah.
Right. I'll throw another one too, which is immigration, which it wasn't in the
news this week.
It was. Actually, it was. It's always in the news.
They have not done any immigration reform. Even Bush, the second Bush or whatever, first wanted to
George
do something.
George W. Bush had some pretty good ideas, but you know, the problem was is that if you allow one party to be the deliverer of the solution, then you might feel that that's going to harm the authority of your party. So therefore you feel better off without a solution.
It's just that the moderate people on both sides are getting their support and their money or whatever from the real absolutists, and then if you did anything, you didn't run again or you were thrown out. Look what happened. There's no moderate Republicans left. You have Romney, whoever thought he would be, but he had a piece, I guess, in the Atlantic that he really said, we're doomed if we want Trump to be president. Right,
exactly. But it is one of the more bizarre and I think unexpected outcomes of the way American democracy has worked its way through the last couple of centuries that we find ourselves in this position now where solutions are actually not inevitable because solutions create a problem. The problem being, you know, the perpetuation of certain political mindsets.
It's true.
You know, I mean, gosh, God forbid we should actually solve something, you know. And I do think about it even in Cambridge with some of our local things where people are going to lose their minds.
It comes down to local and who supports who, and like you don't need that many votes to, and then you don't want to. That's what happened with rent control. They didn't. They went along because they had the people, their votes, and they didn't do anything. And then it got out of their hands because they weren't willing to tweak it at all. You know?
Well, so, and, I'll, and looking back, I mean, I was a political candidate in 1993, which was the last a municipal election while rent control still was legally on the books. And I can say that, you know, certainly that was part of the question you as a candidate had to address was what's your position on rent control?
Right.
And I get and in 1994 is when it went on the ballot and got eradicated.
What was your position?
My position was, in fact, quite what we today call nuanced. It was very Clinton-esque. You know, it was that I basically had a lot of sympathy for the smaller property owners. And I kind of felt that, okay, if you're talking about a big, you know, somebody who owns hundreds and hundreds of units, then you basically, you want to have a kind of a strongly regulated system, as long as you, you know, do it fairly. Then I had no objection to that, but I did have a lot of sympathy. When you started getting down to this 8 units, 7 units, 6 units, 5 units.
Anything above three, anything above owner, if it wasn't owner occupied, you were in trouble.
That's exactly
really what
right.
it was.
Yeah.
Because I know I went through that with a 4-unit building, you know. So,
that's right. Yeah. So I had a lot of sympathy for the people down the lower end. And I just thought there should be some sort of a graduated system that basically gave a lot more freedom and flexibility for people at the low end.
Yeah.
Well, so there, maybe I sounded like a math geek trying to explain this to people, but you know, there were some people who started to think, oh God, somebody's talking sense here, right? But if you talk to the Cambridge Tenants Union, oh my God, they hated, they would hate you more for being that way than if you were just gung-ho anti-rent control, which I wasn't at the time. So, you know, it was an interesting lesson in the inability for people to compromise. And I do remember actually in 1995, no, actually late 1994, after the ballot question passed in the city council was scrambling feverishly, trying to find some sort of a
loophole or something,
solution,
did
whatever.
They couldn't challenge it, could they?
And even though the statewide ballot question had gone through and basically said it's done, the tenant lobby within Cambridge continued to yell, no capitulation. And you know, we were trying to say to him, says, it ain't capitulation. You lost. You're looking for a compromise and an interim solution now. And they would just continue to go, no capitulation. And, you know, and they were ready to run out of office, city councilors who weren't going to go along with them, even though the battle was already over. And I couldn't believe what I was hearing in those days, but that was a good lesson too.
So the next election, did that have an impact still? Do you know?
No. The thing is that, so it was a state, it was a, during the state year, in 1994 election, the question 9 was on the ballot.
Right.
It was eradicated statewide. So was there effects in terms of the 1995 election?
That's what I
meant. Well, yeah. Well, you know, at that point, there was some shifting around. Mm-hmm. Some tenants were being offered the option to buy the units they were living in.
Wow.
And with that, their politics probably started to shift a little bit.
That's
And, you know, and other things that some people moved out, some people were forced out. I remember because I drove a VW bus at the time, helping people move a lot in those days.
Wow.
You know, and including people I didn't know, but people were calling me up saying, Robert, you've got a van. Can you help out here? And I said, sure. You know,
there were people that were protected, like older people, I think, were protected by certain stuff.
Yeah. And if you were living in, for example, a Harvard-owned building, they had
that's what I'm thinking of.
Provisions
so maybe
that actually continued way beyond. And then it was a 3-year phase-out period.
True.
You know, and some people wanted to be much faster, much elongated. Basically, they just wanted to buy time to bring it back. But by the year 20, it was a good long later, but when it went out to as a referendum, local ballot question.
Yeah.
I think in 2003, 60% of Cambridge residents voted to not restore rent control. So
was that, we had it on the ballot back then? I don't remember.
Yeah, it was a local ballot question.
Oh, a local.
It was a pointless effort, quite honestly.
Because it wouldn't have gone. So what, right?
It was an appeal to the legislature. The legislature had already said, no, we're not going to go against the vote that happened in 1994. And the final backstop was that the governor had assured people on one side of that issue that he would veto any such legislation if it came to them anyway. Right. So it never stood a chance. So, I mean, if you were a voter, you know, what was even the point in voting on it? But it did bring a lot more voters that year.
Sure.
And it led to a near double quota for Anthony Galluccio because he was largely associated with the anti-group. And so he benefited politically from that. And,
Interesting. But
slowly but surely, rent control as the defining issue in municipal elections was fading.
So and, what do you think is the new issue?
You know, I think that right now in Cambridge.
The charter, maybe in bike lanes.
Well, I mean, you know, we're in kind of a roll your own period right now.
Yeah.
What are the defining issues? I mean, I could certainly say what I wish they were, but I think, you know, when you we've been seeing, especially with social media, the rise of single issue advocacy. So, so you get a handful of people get together, call themselves a better Cambridge, and then they go density, density, density. Okay, great.
Yeah.
You know, and certain people are going to salute that flag. Some people are not. Other people, and I remember actually back in the 1980s is anti-development, actually even through the 1990s is block those evil capitalists, right?
Still, that hasn't gone away.
Right. Well, but in terms of what is the dominating issue or not, I think that actually it's greatly diminished from what it was. I mean, right now they're doing, there was in the 1990s, there were down zoning petitions everywhere. And now there are up zoning petitions.
Well, depending on what you're building. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Right.
You know, I've given to more than my share of meetings on this or that issue where the members of the public, in fact, quite a few, saying, well, you want to build a 6-story building there, an 8-story building? Why aren't you building 12? Why aren't you building 20? You know, it's very much the opposite. But these are political phases we go through. I try not to get too, flustered by it all, you know.
I think what's going to happen, it relates to the whole charter thing, which we should talk about, is that there will be a ballot question. And I think given the changing of Cambridge, that I can see Plan E greatly restructured, if not abandoned. I think people want a mayor. The one thing I would like to see is district-wide councillors. I don't like the way I just feel like all you have to do is appeal to your little constituency, where I think if you had to do district-wide, and then, or not district-wide, at large, and then you have I don't know what I'm saying. Right. You know what I'm saying. It's a little different than the way we do it.
All right.
So I want to hear you talk about that.
Yeah. Okay. And I could talk at great length about these issues here.
Well, don't you agree that that's going to be a big ballot question at the end of this process, this charter review? Because that's what they say. It has to go to the voters.
Right. So
whatever come up with.
Right. So, well, first off, the first question comes, do people care about things like structure of government? I think people care about hot issues like housing affordability or racial reckoning or abortion rights, if we were talking about national.
But Robert, they care about it if it's framed with some of those issues, and that's
right.
What it'll
be. And what happened actually in the 1930s when the Planning Charter was made available, and I think I was sort of waving at these at you before we went on the air.
Yeah, no, you have the originals. But,
so I applied to be on this Charter Review Commission, didn't get appointed. That's an issue in itself. But
you are an institutional memory. I mean, you know, what did they think you were going to dominate? They probably thought you were going to dominate the committee.
You know, I cannot speak for the three city councilors who likely blackballed me, but I know a fair amount about the charter and I know about the history.
Know more about the history and the charter than anyone on there. And that's not to say other people shouldn't be on there with their views, but I hope there's somebody on there that knows as much as you do.
I think there are some people who certainly have the capacity to, You know, whether okay. they know it now, they will. Some pretty smart. There are a few smart cookies on there.
Good.
But you all know, right. I've actually took some time lately, and I've been reading up the originals on the Planning Charter. You know, for the longest time, I noted that a lot of people equated the term Plan E with proportional representation elections.
Which they didn't is not even, no, two and that's different not, yeah. animals, right?
Yeah. Right. And I'll tell you something which is actually kind of funny. I mean, funny and ironic in a sweet sort of way.
Okay.
There was a time I thought to myself, well, okay, I think I know what the Plan E, everybody talks about, we have a Plan E government. I said, well, what is a Plan E government?
Yeah.
So I asked a few people, I said, well, you know, it's that system where, but nobody can actually give a reference. I went looking on the city website, what? Not a reference at all.
Really?
So what I did was I actually got the sections of the Massachusetts general laws, you know, as well as, you know, the original 1941 rules for counting the ballots. And I got the original chapter 54A, which is was repealed in the early 1970s, which outlined how our elections were run. And I said, well, if somebody doesn't have these documented and put into a place convenient reference, then I think I have to do this. And I did it. Okay, so I had if you Googled, you know, for, you know, Cambridge Plan E, you would go to you would end up at my site and you would find the text of the Plan E charter.
But don't you think these people have to have copies of this given to them to study the charter?
Well, if they will, absolutely.
Okay.
Will. But, right. and in fact, the city now does have a copy of this on their site, but I will tell you, and here's the funny part, which is that, they got it from me. I mean, because mine has had a few embedded hyperlinks to sort of go to other documents, and they're still in the city's version. They didn't take them out. So you're there in absentia. Yeah, absolutely. Right. Okay. You know, and listen, so for political reasons, and I'm sure it was political reasons, so I got blackballed. But that's okay. You know, it's not like I'm going away. and I'm still going to be probably the most active participant from the general public at this.
Oh, because they'll have... Oh, are those going to be open meetings?
Well, you know, the thing is, now this gets to another issue, which
open anyway. Right?
No, these would have to be. This is a official city-sanctioned body. Now, but you know, I used to go to city council committee meetings, and this is not a city council committee per se. But if you were a person who had a fair amount to say and had some expertise, you were always brought into the conversation, and you could sort of raise your hand and participate if they allowed you to, which they often and generally did. There has been a trend in the last few years, especially under Zoom, to be very dismissive of the public, basically to say, this is the public comment period of the meeting, speak now, and when you hit exactly 120 seconds, we're gonna cut you off and tell you can just mail it in. You know,
but in defense of that process, I mean, when you have 100 people signed up, come on,
I'm fully willing to acknowledge that reality. But the thing is even at council committee meetings, they still abide
there should have
by
been
the
more
same.
Give and take. Yeah. Okay.
Council committee meetings were always much more freewheeling.
Because they were in the open and it probably was smaller and things are, it's not.
Right. This city council has reached a point of comfort in what is fundamentally snubbing the open meeting ideas, you know, whether you're talking about a city council meeting where they start going on at length about some document that they do not even share with the public that has been introduced late in the meeting.
Right. But that's also been brought up by some councils themselves.
It's been brought up actually by Heather Hoffman from the public, and then the councils have responded to that.
That's true. Okay.
And I'm thankful to Heather for especially bringing up that point.
All right. But give an example, the selection committee for the city manager, those weren't open meetings, were they?
No. But the thing is that if you're talking about a situation like that, there's a reason why under state law.
Oh, because of privacy, because it's candidates.
Privacy. You put candidates coming from the outside applying for a job.
Point. Okay.
And also, let's be clear that the choice of a city manager is fundamentally just the counselor is making a decision about something that's already in their authority. Changing the charter, if you go back to what happened in past charter changes, in fact, the big one of all was when the Plan E charter came about for Cambridge. You know, there's a nice magazine article I have reprinted on my website.
Oh, the Colliers. Yeah,
we've talked about the Colliers article. It basically says that change in the charter was not done by the elected officials. It was done by the people of the city.
Who saw corruption, right? They saw
problematic aspects of the way their government was structured, and they wanted to change it. And they were fought by the elected officials.
Interesting.
Now, this is a very fundamentally different way of doing things compared to what has now been proposed, what we now have as part of our planning charter. By the way, it was just, I guess it was yesterday or actually this morning, come to think of it. What I did is I actually took my copy, my Plan E charter that has been on my website for ages now.
Yeah.
And I said, you know, one thing I forgot to do was to take those three ballot questions from this past fall and weave them in there, you know, to give sort of the amended, recently amended version. So I went doing that.
Yeah.
Wow. And I said, well, let me just make sure they're in the right place. So actually that's when I went to the city site and saw they actually had a PDF.
Yeah.
Of the revised, the latest revision in there.
Okay, good. All right.
You know, so I figured, okay, let me at least have this in a convenient place for people to look at, whether it's people on this committee or just anybody, you know, just so they can actually have sort of definitively where you are. So anyway, it was interesting because I started thinking harder about the difference between how that charter came to be versus the way we change charters now. I mean, right now, that ballot question from last fall specifically says the only way we're going to change charters from now on is the mayor, right, who is elected by councillors, shall appoint a group of four councillors who will then choose a group of 12 to 18, in the end they chose 15.
Yeah.
Who will then make proposed changes to the city charter.
Okay.
Right. To which will then be forwarded to the city council. But what it does not say is what the council must then do or what leverage they have. So to whatever degree it is silent on that, my personal read, and please, if somebody can correct me on this wrong, but I think I'm right. The city council could take any recommendations from this charter review committee and reject them all, amend them.
Yeah.
Or propose their own.
And then put it on the ballot. So in other words, fundamentally,
they basically said the only entity that shall have any real say
is the council.
Future changes is that whoever is currently on the elected body. What happens if you have an elected body where the people aren't particularly thrilled with them? They can boot them out in an election, I suppose.
But the Charter Review Committee is just advisory anyway, right?
Right. It is advisory. But the thing is, had we created a Charter Commission, then it would not have been. You would actually have been elected to the Charter Commission.
So we should have done that. Is that what you're saying?
I would say that it would have been preferable.
Because you need a separation between who's going to decide this. And you're right. It's very
right now political. we are basically in a position now where the incumbent city councilors pretty much have absolute veto power over anything and everything that comes through here.
When is the next election? Not this year.
And I think the idea is to move this process through to have it ready for that. So
there'll be an election. So, oh my goodness.
So what it basically means is you'll have, you know, five or more councillors may very well be choosing the charter changes, which they feel dovetails into their own electoral. And, you know, by the way, I have no sense about, you know, in an ideal world, what would happen when talking about charter review is that everybody on that committee would be completely open to all suggestions. And I hope that will prove to be the case. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's also possible, you know, and I think there's at least some reason to believe that some people are walking in there with an agenda. And, you know, so, for example, there's at least one political organization who was arguing in favor of getting rid of 2-year terms in favor of 4-year terms.
Oh,
right. And by the way, Ari, if you want to talk about that, that's fair game. But you know, one thing we do not have, because people have asked me about it a lot, we have no recall position, recall process. If people are really frustrated with a particular city council, or if there's something really serious problem and they want to like boot somebody out, we can't do it.
Do other cities do that?
Yes, some places do it. The recall, the way we do a recall in Cambridge is the next municipal election. It's everybody's up for re-election every 2 years.
Well, maybe that's why you should keep it every 2 years.
I actually would argue that that's exactly what it should be. It should remain at 2 years. Or if somebody is absolutely insistent on making it 4 year terms, then they're going to have to weave in a recall provision into the new charter, which will not be called the Plan E charter, because the charter, you know, our current Plan E charter is called that because it was part of a provision, a subset of the Massachusetts general laws. And the planned charters, A, B, C, D, E, are gone. They don't exist anymore. So it would be kind of silly to continue to call it the Plan E charter if you were to revise it. It's already silly too.
I know. And then the 4 year thing seems to go along with people that might want a mayor, because then if you have the councilors 4 years, you're not going to just appoint a mayor for 4 years. You're going to have an elected mayor. And then if they want all that, then they're going to have to get rid of PR and have either at large or district or something.
All right. Yeah. Well, that's another
kind
question.
Kind of like Boston.
We can talk more about that. But the thing is, that proportional representation was an integral part of the planning charter of the so-called weak mayor, strong city manager, the PR elected council.
Right, but I'm just saying, if that changes, then you're going to have to change
I mean, increasing the authority of an elected PR council is a prescription for disaster. If you look at history.
I agree with you. So the next segment we can finish up on that.
Yeah, go a little bit more on that topic.
Yeah, I think it's very important. So
it is very much. So anyway, we'll be back in
a few minutes
on Cambridge Inside Out.
Okay, see you.